I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today we're going to explore more about Osama bin Laden's life and about his most recent death. Then I'm going to tell you about a 10th anniversary event coming up this September 11th in Toronto. As the discussion rages on in the corporate media about Osama bin Laden's latest death, and the Obama administration is scrambling to get its story straight, and when you're not telling the truth, that can be a daunting task, I think it's important to keep this in mind. The FBI has said in 2006 that it has no hard evidence linking Osama bin Laden to 9/11. I haven't heard that mentioned yet in the corporate media, but to me, it's a pretty significant and newsworthy bit of information. But I did recently come across this piece from a TV news show on the station KSLA that was aired sometime during the Bush Jr. presidency. And here it is.
President Bush's redirection in Iraq is leading some Americans to ask themselves, just how did we get here? Less than a month after the attacks of September the 11th, America began its war on terror in Afghanistan and the hunt for Osama bin Laden. Tonight, KSLA News 12's Jeff Farrell takes a closer look at these origins and discovered something that's still conspicuously absent.
The FBI's 10 Most Wanted poster reads, quote, Osama bin Laden is wanted in connection with the August 7, 1998 bombings of the United States embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. These attacks killed over 200 people. In addition, bin Laden is a suspect in other terrorist attacks throughout the world. It turns out, though, bin Laden has never been indicted for 9/11. And there's not a single mention of it directly in the FBI poster. Sheila Thorne in the FBI's New Orleans office told us, quote, the indictment could be superseded if necessary. In other words, 9/11 charges could be tacked on later for something many describe as the Pearl Harbor of our generation. As for why there is no mention at all of 9/11 in the FBI's 10 Most Wanted poster of Osama bin Laden, we wanted to get a comment from the White House as well. When we talked to a gentleman by the name of Blair Jones at the White House press office, he told us that we need to go back to justice, in other words, the FBI. We told him we wanted a separate comment, and he said, quote, we speak with one voice.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Just 9 days after 9/11, the president addressed a joint session of Congress where he blamed Al-Qaeda, even mentioning its leader Osama bin Laden by name. Then came December 13, 2001, when the Pentagon released bin Laden's so-called confession video. The FBI revised bin Laden's poster 2 months after September 11th, and 5 years later, there's still no 9/11 reference. We asked retired Barksdale General Peyton Cole for his reaction.
It's puzzling, and it begs a question of why not.
And we're waiting for that answer, too. Jeff Farrell, KSLA News 12 reporting.
FBI Special Agent Sheila Thorne called KSLA News 12 just before news time this afternoon, telling us that our questions are not those that the FBI should answer. Thorne told us the decision whether to indict Osama bin Laden for the 9/11 attacks is made by the U.S. Justice Department. We'll keep you posted.
Noam Chomsky has also picked up on the fact that the government has no evidence linking Osama bin Laden to 9/11. I'm going to read part of an article written by Noam Chomsky called My Reaction to Osama bin Laden's Death. The article was posted on the reader-supported news website on May 7, 2011, and here goes. It's increasingly clear that the operation was a planned assassination, multiply violating elementary norms of international law. There appears to have been no attempt to apprehend the unnamed victim, as presumably could have been done by 80 commandos facing virtually no opposition, except, they claim, from his wife, who lunged toward them. In societies that profess some respect for law, suspects are apprehended and brought to fair trial. I stress suspects. In April 2002, the head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, informed the press that after the most intensive investigation in history, the FBI could say no more than that it believed that the plot was hatched in Afghanistan, though implemented in the United Arab Emirates and Germany. What they only believed in April 2002, they obviously didn't know 8 months earlier, when Washington dismissed tentative offers by the Taliban to extradite bin Laden if they were presented with evidence, which, as soon as we learned, Washington didn't have. Thus, Obama was simply lying when he said in his White House statement that we quickly learned that the 9/11 attacks were carried out by Al-Qaeda. Nothing serious has been provided since. And again, that was from an article by Noam Chomsky called My Reaction to Osama bin Laden's Death. One of the best sources of information on Osama bin Laden's death in December of 2001 is David Ray Griffin's book called Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, which was published in 2009. You can get a copy of it by going to the website interlinkbooks.com. I'm going to read a few paragraphs from the book on the lack of evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to 9/11. And here goes. On October 4th, Blair had provided something that the Bush administration had refused to supply after having promised to do so, a document containing evidence that Osama bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Blair's document listing, quote, clear conclusions reached by the government stated, quote, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, the terrorist network which he heads, planned and carried out the atrocities on 11 September 2001. However, claiming that the government's best evidence for bin Laden's guilt was too sensitive to release, this document began with a significant caveat that it did, quote, not purport to provide a prosecutable case against Osama bin Laden in a court of law. The weakness of the evidence presented by the Blair government's document, which was implicitly acknowledged in this caveat, was explicitly pointed out the following day by the BBC. In a report entitled, quote, The Investigation and the Evidence, unquote, the BBC said, there is no direct evidence in the public domain linking Osama bin Laden to the 11 September attacks. At best, the evidence is circumstantial. So let that sink in for a minute. The government has no hard evidence linking Osama bin Laden to the crimes of 9/11, which the FBI has said on more than one occasion, and yet we've killed more than a million people in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Pakistan, all justified by going after Osama bin Laden. And we've given up our civil liberties, and we've wasted all the war dollars that could be helping our communities. This is huge, and yet few media outlets are paying attention to it. And now we see our leaders and the corporate media saying that we just killed Osama bin Laden when all the evidence points to his death in December of 2001. And now we're bragging about murdering this guy and dumping his body into the ocean when we don't even have him wanted for the crime. And now here's a clip of a local Abbottabad resident speaking with an Al Jazeera's reporter.
Now, I'm actually here with an eyewitness by the name of Jahangir Khan. Jahangir, if you could just stand right here for me. Jahangir, in the early hours of the morning, you heard some explosions. Tell me what you saw.
Actually, I was almost awake, 1 o'clock. I was talking to my friend on UK online on Skype, and I hear the helicopter was moving. And I was talking to my wife, what's happening? And we were a little bit scary. We came out, and I have seen the helicopter. I went to top of my roof, and because it was totally dark, there was no lights, but I have seen them. It was, I think it was Apache helicopter. So they was moving around 12 o'clock. Then they start firing a few minutes. Then they came again, few minutes firing. Then around 1 o'clock, we went inside. We thought, I don't know what's happening. Then by 1 o'clock, we went inside. And then 1:15, we hear the explorer, like big noise. Then we scared and we came out from, we jumped outside from the house and we saw all the people was going up to the, then we went up, Then I hear the people was crying there somewhere. Like, then we run there because my cousin is living there, right? It's 5 minutes walk if I run from my house to there. Then we run there, me and my brother and a few other people. We run there, but when we went there, there was all fire going on. It was nothing. And then army came over. They took over. We were there until 4 o'clock.
Okay, so you woke up in the morning and then you heard the news. It was an assault carried out by the United States in which they captured and killed Osama bin Laden. What did you think when you heard the news?
When I came back at 4 o'clock from there to my house, I opened the news and this is about Osama bin Laden. I was shocked. And to be honest, I'm living here all my life. And you know that if somebody new comes in your street, in your area, you always know. Like somebody is... You can feel them, you can see the movement. I ever seen anything like that. I can't believe that.
You know, a lot of people in your neighborhood have said that they were suspicious about this house. Was there anything about this house that you found suspicious, that you found strange about?
To be honest, I always go in the evening, walk from my house to the same house where they said the Osama bin Laden, the next house is my other house, which I rented to my cousin friend. And I every day in the evening, we went there by walk with my wife for the just walking. I never seen anything like that, and that's why I can't believe that. And to be honest, it's not true. Osama, maybe some other people, but Osama is not the bird who came, fly, went to the inside, because this is restricted area. When we came out from outside to come here to, always army will say, hey, where's your ID card? So it's not believe. Unbelievable.
All right. Thank you very much. An interesting reaction. That was Jahangir Khan.
And now here's a song written and sung by Gary Fox, who has a cable access show in Middletown called 9/11 Illumination. This was written prior to Osama bin Laden's latest death. This song is called Osama.
So far to get to where we are, so far from the truth. Osama, it is so strange how we are so afraid of a man who is dead. Osama.
And now here's James Corbett of The Corbett Report, giving a great overview of Osama bin Laden's history and powerful connections.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com with the last word on Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden was one of the 54 children of Mohammed bin Awad bin Laden, a construction magnate who made his fortune by cozying up to the royal family of Saudi Arabia. The bin Laden family has had an intimate relationship with the upper reaches of global power politics for the past half century. In 1976, Salem bin Laden, Osama's half-brother, co-founded Arbusto Energy with George W. Bush. In 1996, after the bombing of the Khobar Towers for which Osama took credit, the Saudi bin Laden group was given the contract to rebuild the facility. Also in 1996, FBI agents in the Washington field office were investigating the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, a suspected terrorist organization that included Abdullah bin Laden, the group's president and treasurer, and Omar bin Laden. BBC News uncovered internal FBI documents showing how the agents were ordered to stop their investigation. The case was only reopened the week after 9/11 and the day after both brothers fled the U.S. with FBI permission. In 1998, another FBI investigation into the bin Laden brothers, this one initiated by the New York field office, was called off by the State Department because, it was revealed, the bin Laden family had been granted Saudi diplomatic passports in 1996 and thus had diplomatic immunity inside the United States. On the morning of 9/11, Osama bin Laden's half-brother, Shafiq bin Laden, was the guest of honor at a meeting of the Carlyle Group in Washington, which George H.W. Bush was also addressing. In the days after 9/11, 24 members of the bin Laden family and over 100 members of the Saudi royal family were flown to assembly points in Texas and Washington, and then flown out of the country. At least one of those flights took place during the total ban on civilian air traffic over North American airspace. Declassified FBI documents show that the Bureau believed the bin Laden family flight out of the country, carrying suspected terrorists Abdullah and Omar bin Laden, was chartered by Osama bin Laden himself, but some of the passengers, including Abdullah, were not even interviewed in person by the FBI before their departure. Of course, for the purveyors of the official conspiracy theory of Al-Qaeda, none of this has any relevance because the Saudi bin Laden group, the family business conglomerate, issued a terse, two-sentence statement in April of 1994, publicly disowning Osama. The facts, however, indicate that the public disowning was in fact a ruse. In 2004, Osama's half-brother Yeslam bin Laden admitted that the family shared a joint Swiss bank account with him. The account was not closed until 1997, the year after the Khobar Towers bombing. Yeslam's ex-wife, Carmen, has also stated that she cannot believe that the family have cut off Osama completely, as have Vincent Canestrano, the former head of the CIA Counterterrorism Center, Michael Scheuer, the former head of the CIA Bin Laden Unit, and the French Intelligence Service, which released a report 2 days after 9/11 indicating they believed the Bin Laden family to be covertly aiding Osama. Nonetheless, the question remains, do the bin Laden family connections to the highest circles of power in the American political establishment have any relevance to the story of Osama bin Laden? Is there any evidence that American intelligence was involved with Osama himself over the years? During Operation Cyclone, the U.S. government funded the Afghan Mujahideen in their struggle against the Soviets in the largest covert operation in CIA history to that date. An estimated $5 billion in arms and funding were supplied to the jihadis, including Stinger anti-aircraft missiles and other equipment that kept the Soviet Red Army bogged down in the country for years. Officially, the CIA's contact was limited to the Afghans themselves, and no funding was given to the so-called Arab Afghans like Osama bin Laden, the Muslims from the Arab world who came to Afghanistan to aid in the fight against the Soviets. In reality, however, CIA funds were being funneled to the ISI, the Pakistani intelligence service that distributed those funds to the Arab Afghans through an organization called MAK, or the Bureau of Services. Osama bin Laden was the one in charge of MAK's finances. This much was admitted by Osama's brother Salem in 1985, who confessed that Osama was the liaison between the US, the Saudi government, and the Afghan rebels at the time. In 1986, Salem asked the Pentagon for anti-aircraft missiles on Osama's behalf. The former chief of the U.S. Visa Bureau in Jeddah, Michael Springman, has testified that during his time there, he was repeatedly ordered by CIA officials to approve visas for bin Laden's Mujahideen cohorts so that they could be provided training at U.S. military bases. 11 of the 19 alleged 9/11 hijackers would go on to get their visas from the same consulate. FBI whistleblower Sibel Edmonds has admitted that in her time at the FBI, she saw proof that the U.S. had maintained a very intimate relationship with bin Laden all the way through the 1990s, up to September 11th. The Guardian reported that Osama had traveled to the American hospital in Dubai for kidney dialysis treatment in July 2001. While there, he was visited by the local CIA station chief. When the CIA official later boasted about having met Osama bin Laden, he was promptly recalled to Washington. In a July 2005 article in The Guardian, Robin Cook, the former Speaker of the British House of Commons, asserted that the name Al-Qaeda itself actually referred to a database containing CIA assets from the Afghan Mujahideen struggle. Even Osama's alleged responsibility for the 9/11 events has been repeatedly called into question. In the weeks after 9/11, the Taliban offered to hand bin Laden over if the U.S. provided proof that he was connected to the attack. Bush turned the offer down. After the invasion of Afghanistan began in October, the Taliban again tried to hand him over, this time dropping the request for proof of bin Laden's guilt. Bush again refused. After video of what the Pentagon alleged was Osama bin Laden confessing to the 9/11 attacks emerged in December 2001, a German national news program conducted its own investigation into the tape. According to its own independent translators, every single point in the video that the Pentagon alleges indicate Osama's foreknowledge or complicity in the 9/11 attack has been mistranslated, and they claim that the video does not, in fact, provide any proof of confession. Famously, FBI spokesman Rex Toom told investigative journalist Ed Haas that the FBI did not include 9/11 on bin Laden's most wanted profile because there was no hard evidence connecting him to the crime. And yet, within the first minute of TV coverage of the second plane hitting the World Trade Center on 9/11, Osama bin Laden was named as the likely perpetrator of the event. This idea solidified into a near certainty within hours, and the 24/7 news coverage shifted almost immediately to the question of when the U.S. would invade Afghanistan. In an interview the day after 9/11, confronted with this tendency of the press to jump to conclusions about Osama's involvement, ex-CIA station chief Milt Bearden made some unexpected statements about the supposed terrorist mastermind.
Well, Milt Bearden, again, you're one of our most experienced people with long experience in Afghanistan. What does your gut tell you about who's responsible for these attacks this week?
My gut tells me we don't know the answer yet. My gut tells me that I'm not going to go with the first answer that comes to mind, but that there's quite possibly something else out there. Experts will jump on you and say it's Osama bin Laden's M.O. He's the only one that is capable of this type of coordinated attack. My answer to them is he's the only one you know that's capable of this kind of attack. This was a tremendously sophisticated operation against the United States, more sophisticated than anybody would ever have ascribed to Osama bin Laden. I think we need to do a little homework. We need to appoint a team B that looks for somebody else. I'm just not convinced it was bin Laden.
There's no question in my mind that you're skeptical that Osama bin Laden, aided and abetted, or at least protected by the Taliban, should be the principal target of some large military operation. If I'm wrong about that, tell me now.
No, you're not wrong, Dan. I'm saying is, let me step back one step on this and say, Osama bin Laden is an evil man, and he's a component of the terrorism that we're dealing with across the board. All I'm saying is that I think Osama bin Laden has become the metaphor for the entire problem of terrorism involving Muslims with perceived grievances against the United States. And I think it would be wrong to say this is a one-size-fits-all operation and to go after bin Laden, because an operation as sophisticated as carried out yesterday was an operation that was concealed from us for months, probably before it took place. It happened without essentially a hitch, except for one aircraft. And there is no reason to believe that these same people weren't capable of covering their tracks somehow on the way out. Now, I would go so far as to say that this group who was responsible for that, if they didn't have an Osama bin Laden out there, they'd invent one. because he's a terrific diversion for the rest of the world.
And now, in May of 2011, after Osama bin Laden has been allegedly tracked down and allegedly shot by a Navy SEAL team, after $1 trillion and two wars have been waged in the name of fighting his shadowy, non-existent terror organization, as the very fabric of our society itself has been torn asunder in the never-ending hunt for the terrorist boogeymen under our collective bed, perhaps it's time to ask once again what Osama bin Laden means to us, after all. If one were to base their understanding of Osama bin Laden solely on mainstream media coverage of him over the last 10 years, a very different picture would emerge to the one with which you have just been presented. This media-constructed image would be one of a radical Muslim who appeared out of nowhere in the 1990s to begin a string of increasingly devastating terror attacks on American targets. After masterminding the 9/11 attacks in some undefined manner from a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, he supposedly outwitted and outmaneuvered the combined might of the most powerful military and the most technologically sophisticated intelligence dragnet in the history of the world for an entire decade, all the while releasing video and audio tapes from his secret compound to taunt his would-be captors. Finally, we are told, he was tracked down and shot in a special forces raid during which live video transmissions were inexplicably unavailable and then buried at sea before his death could be confirmed by any independent third party. What emerges from this official Osama bin Laden story is not a person, but a comic book villain, a faceless, mysterious, motivationalist embodiment of terrorism with all the reality of a Lex Luthor or Cobra Commander. His is a powerful myth, made all the more powerful because it has been constructed and promoted by the very politicians and string pullers who claim to be opposing him. Like Orwell's Emmanuel Goldstein, his face can be put before the public from time to time to produce the two-minute hate, a cathartic projection of anger upon an empty image. We know to hiss when his picture is dangled before us, and cheer when we are told he is dead. But always, always it is stressed that he is fearsome, that he is ruthless, and that the only way to stop him is to surrender our rights and freedoms. Even in death, we are told, he and the mythical army of devotees he supposedly ruled over are a clear and present danger to our society, necessitating the continuation of the never-ending wars against abstract nouns, TSA agents groping children at the airports, and extrajudicial no-fly lists that are turning into no-ride lists and no-buy lists. The only thing we can say for certain is that the Osama bin Laden character has now been disposed of in a far-fetched burial story only fitting of his cartoonish myth. And now the public is already being prepared for his replacement myths, a gaggle of similarly cartoonish characters no less connected to the Western intelligence establishment than Osama himself. But after finally waking from the 10-year nightmare of the Osama bin Laden fable, are the public willing to go straight back to sleep? Or are they going to start questioning the official narratives that are cemented into place in the wake of every large-scale event? Narratives that always support more government intrusion in our lives, expanded wars of aggression around the globe, and an ever-expanding police state? It's an important question, and one that must be answered quickly, while the public is still wary and skeptical of a government that has lied to them time and time again, and then refuses to provide that public with a single credible shred of proof that the largest manhunt in the history of America has ended with the disposal of this intelligence asset, Osama bin Laden. For if the public does choose to go back to sleep and dismiss the copious documentary evidence that the entire war on terror is a fraud being perpetrated by the same people who claim to be fighting the terrorists, we may never be able to awake from whatever nightmare they have planned for us next. For the Corbett Report in Western Japan, I am James Corbett.
And now I want to tell you about an event called the Toronto Hearings. For 4 days on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, hearings will be held in Toronto, with many of the expert researchers on 9/11 sharing what they've discovered in their research. This is the information that the corporate media seldom tells you about. It's a major event. To learn more about it, you can go to their website at torontohearings.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.